Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Hey fam.
Hello sunshine. Today on The Bright Side, upgrade your physical and emotional well-being. Psychiatrist and author Dr. Sue Varma is here to show us the power of flexing our optimism muscle.
It's Wednesday, April 10th. I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robé, and this is The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine.
Hi Danielle.
See money. We didn't really get to catch up after your trip. How are you feeling after watching the eclipse in real time?
I feel like it sent me into an existential spiral, if I'm being honest.
Oh, only you.
Only me, of
yes.
course.
Why is that?
Because I went to go watch the eclipse with all my dad's family, like 30 relatives that I haven't seen in probably like 10 years. And I saw my aunts and uncles and how they've been impacted by those years that I haven't seen them and how fast they're aging. And it just hit me so hard. Like, you know how you're growing up and you're at the kids' table and you look up to your uncles and aunts and they're like these almost immortal figures in your life?
Yes.
And so then to see them aging and frail and like in pain or just, you know, natural signs of aging like silver hair. It just like it really hit me in a big way this trip.
It's so hard to see. Did it make you want to move to Buffalo and take your kids there and do a whole different kind of life?
It didn't make me want to move there because I don't think that's me. But it did make me think about the sacrifices that we make for our dreams. And leaving extended family behind is one of them. Both my dad and my mom left their families behind at an early age to go pursue their careers. And I did the exact same thing. And that is a very real sacrifice.
I think about it all the time.
Do you really?
Oh my God. I don't want to call it an irrational fear because I think it's rational, but a huge fear that I will not have children in time for my parents to really know them because I had such a special relationship with my grandparents. And so each year I get older, I get so anxious and nervous about that because family is so deep in my bones.
Yeah. Do you feel like we've like lost sight of family, of the importance of family being in a city like Los Angeles?
I think about that a lot. I'm not sure. I do think there's seasons in life. Like, I think that we're in our mountain climbing years in a lot of ways. But my dad always calendared things out. And I think he did that because if you don't have something on the calendar, it just doesn't happen.
Yes.
And so my goal is to plan a few more trips and make sure that they happen.
That's the big takeaway for me. And when I texted my friend about this, I was like feeling kind of sad about it. She was like, listen, it is a privilege and an honor to get to watch your family members age. The big takeaway for me is I just need to be more intentional about seeing them.
Yeah. We need family reunions.
Family, bring back the family reunion.
Bring
COVID
it back.
COVID ruined the family reunion.
Yes. We need to bring them back. It's potluck. It doesn't have to be fancy.
Yes.
We just need a place because it's too hard to fly all over the country. People live everywhere nowadays.
Yes.
We need one place once a year where we all come together for one weekend.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. So that's my existential crisis. Let's lighten it up, okay?
Honestly, a really real existential crisis, though. I'm glad you brought it up. I'm glad we got to air it out. Let's see what's popping on our feeds today. This is your morning drip.
Danielle, Billie Eilish, are you a fan?
Huge. Oh, my God. She
love
is
her.
Such an old soul. Wise beyond her years.
Every time I listen to her music, I'm just like, how? Why? Who? How? How is one person? I mean, it's her and her brother, but like, how can they be so creative and brilliant?
She's been here before. That's why.
Oh, past lives?
Yeah, yeah.
Past life stuff?
Yeah, yeah. She's like on her 97th life, I think.
Okay, we haven't had the past life conversation. We need to talk about reincarnation at some point. But, okay, big news in the world of Billie Eilish, right? She is hard launching her upcoming album. It's called Hit Me Hard and Soft. I cannot wait for this. I know this is something I'm going to be playing on repeat. This is actually her third full-length album, and it's going to come out next month. We don't have to wait too long, May 17th. And she announced it on Instagram, and she said that there won't be any singles leading up to the release.
Interesting move.
Interesting, very strategic move. So the album is going to come out all at once.
What does Hit Me Hard and Soft mean? Like, that's the title?
It's Billy.
It's a little sexual.
It's a dichotomy.
Yeah. There's always like eight meanings behind
totally.
What she does. So I'm excited to hear what it actually means instead of my mind going in one direction. But speaking of sexual, did you watch The Bear?
Of course.
Okay. So Jeremy Allen White, who has become a real sex symbol in today's culture, you might remember him in those tighty whities and those Calvin Klein ads, but we might also see him in some very tight jeans, complete with an iconic red bandana. He's reportedly in talks to play Bruce Springsteen in the upcoming biopic, Deliver Me From Nowhere.
The boss.
But the movie just landed at 20th Century Studios and is about the making of Springsteen's 1982 Nebraska album.
I love this for Jeremy. I think he's going to crush it.
He's such a talented actor. Did you
so
see
talented.
Shameless? I watch because I'm from Chicago.
I did not.
He is so freaking good. He like can be comedic, dramatic. You believe him on screen. And he's so sexy ugly. I love him in anything.
It's so funny that he had this whole chapter from before The Bear where he was in Shameless. That wasn't really on my radar. And so I think a lot of people look at The Bear and the success of that show and they're like, oh, he was just an overnight success. He came out of nowhere. But he's been doing this for a minute.
Yeah, he has. He earned it.
Okay. People, get ready to lose control this summer because the one, the only, Missy Elliott is going on her first ever headline tour. That's crazy.
Woo! Cue the applause. I can't believe this is her first ever. It is so overdue. I have no words.
She's been making music. She's been Missy for 30 years. How is this her first headline tour? This is insane.
Here's the thing about Missy. Not that there weren't other women rappers that deserve respect before her, because there were. But she was one of the first women rappers that the men respected. She changed the game for female rap artists. And the music videos she would produce were so crazy creative. She really made an impact on the industry. And I think generations of people are going to come out for this tour.
But do you think that she had to present as masculine in order to gain the respect of the boys in the business?
I think that's just who she was.
I just wonder, like, would they have treated her the same if...
if she was Lil' Kim? No. But it all... the timing and everything worked out for her, and she made a wave.
She's iconic. Style icon. Okay, so this tour, she's going to be bringing out Busta Rhymes, Ciara, Timbaland. I mean, I would love to see them in person. I have to go to this. The tour starts in July. It's going to hit 24 cities across North America.
We have to round out our morning drip with another boss lady.
Yeah.
Did you see Rihanna's Interview magazine cover that just came out?
Did I?
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
So I eat up any Rihanna interview because she's pretty private. And in this one, she actually got really candid. You can tell she's like friendly with the interviewer. And so it starts at 3 a.m., which is so Rihanna. It goes for 90 minutes and she talks about everything. She talks about her relationship with ASAP, how in love they are, her kids, being in mom mode, her obsession with Bravo, obviously. I was interested to hear her thoughts on plastic surgery. And then obviously in true Rihanna fashion, she sort of vaguely mentions new music and we don't learn anything more.
She keeps doing this to us every few years.
Yeah.
Wait, what did she say about plastic surgery? I missed that part.
I wasn't going to mention it, but now that you ask, her exact quote is, "I want my titties pinned back to my shoulders right where they used to be. I don't want implants. I just want to lift."
I'm just imagining her walking into a plastic surgeon's office in Beverly Hills and being like, "Pin these titties back to my shoulders, please, right now."
Yeah, I mean, she would say that.
I just love her. God, she's so funny.
But she talks about how she's scared to go under the knife. And so, you know, if she picked one thing, it would be her boobs.
Listen.
But she was really candid.
That is so relatable, especially after you give birth. Them thangs ain't what they used to be. Them thangs be hanging low.
You have to give me the whole lowdown.
But I did. I really related to one of the pictures that she posted on her Instagram from this shoot. It's like she's like dressed as kind of like a trad wife almost, and she has really dark circles under her eyes.
Oh, it's like zombie.
It's like a zombie trad wife. Yeah. And her caption was literally how I feel in postpartum. I was like, girl, I've been there. I want to text her and be like, hey, I'm with you. I don't have her number.
How long does it take to feel like yourself again?
Oh, God. See, I don't like to tell people the truth.
What's the truth? Give it to me real.
The other day...
Don't give me the bright side.
So I have to tell a story first. I'm sitting with my friend the other day at her apartment. She's pregnant and she's like terrified of giving birth. And so I showed her my birth videos the other day. Like she got
all of it?
All of it. Like she got to see the baby coming out.
Who filmed your birth video?
My husband. I made him do it.
Oh my God.
I know. Isn't that neurotic?
I mean, he's a director, but it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Even the doctor was like, he doesn't need to be doing this right now. Like, you're giving birth. So anyways, I'm trying to help her feel better about giving birth. And she asked me that question, how long does it take? And the honest truth is 2 years.
Okay.
But it's incremental.
After each baby? Or
yeah.
If you have two under two?
No, I think, well, if you have two under two, good luck. But I think it takes about a year. A year is a pretty big milestone for you. You know, like the baby's more independent. You're starting to feel like yourself. It happens in stages. But yeah. Two is like when you really are like, okay, I can take back my life again.
I froze my eggs and they say just that is about 6 months.
Yeah.
So there you go. I can't imagine. It makes sense giving birth would be about 2 years.
Yeah. The math is mathing.
Stay with us, because after the break, we're learning how to get more than just an optimistic outlook. Dr. Sue Varma tells us how to get optimistic outcomes.
Oh, that sounds so good. I can't wait to hear this interview. I'm bummed that I had to miss it, Danielle.
We missed you so much. I actually felt like it was an interview that you would have loved, but now we get to listen to it. Simone. I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes. That it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. I'm Danielle Robay, and it's Wellness Wednesday. Today, we're talking about a very bright side subject, optimism. I mean, after all, we named our podcast The Bright Side, right? But in my mind, optimism is not just a buzzword or a mood. It's a mindset that shapes how we see the world and drives our actions. There's a growing body of research that shows changing your mindset by thinking more optimistically can actually have a huge effect on your physical and emotional well-being. So maybe we're all missing a huge obvious tool in our self-care toolbox, optimism. Here to talk about it is Dr. Sue Varma. She's a board-certified psychiatrist, cognitive behavioral therapist, and the author of the book Practical Optimism. Dr. Varma, thank you so much for joining us on The Bright Side.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Okay, I may be a little biased, but I do feel like this is the perfect show for your research, Dr. Varma. Can you start us off with what your definition of optimism is?
Yes. So optimism is an outlook that positive things will happen, right? And so for me, I thought this was so interesting because when you look at resilience, optimism is a key feature. So in an uncertain situation where any number of outcomes are possible, an optimistic person will always imagine the most favorable outcome. But I wanted to go one step further. I didn't want to just have a person have a positive outlook in life. I want to help them have positive outcomes in life.
Ooh, not just an outlook, an outcome.
Yes.
It's actionable.
Actionable, absolutely. And that's what practical optimism is.
Because I think you're touching on something that people conflate. They think of optimism and then they think happiness or positivity. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's a real difference. Like you're not just saying everything's great, everything's fine, and kind of lying to yourself
yes.
almost. Optimism is acknowledging that there is an issue,
yes.
but that you will see that light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. And to me, that's how I define it. It's a practical choice. It's a decision that you make, right? So it's not mm-hmm. just an outlook. Because, look, the reality is that some of us are not born with a positive outlook. That's not our natural inclination. Like, let's say you're at the airport and they're like, there's a plane delay. Does your mind automatically go to, oh my God, I'm going to miss my plane. I'm going to miss the meeting or the wedding or whatever it is that I'm traveling to. Or does your brain say, it's fine, it'll probably only be 10 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. So we all have a genetic predisposition, a tendency towards one or the other. But what if you do if you're the glass half empty type? Are you screwed in life? And I'm like, no, I don't want to be screwed in life because a lot of times I am glass half empty depending on the situation. And that's the other thing is that you can be optimistic in one aspect of your life, let's say in romance and relationships, but not in others, and maybe not in finances, maybe not at your job. So it can also depend like case by case.
I was actually so curious if you consider yourself an optimist.
You know, that's such a tricky thing. I don't think I was. And I think that I have a tendency sometimes to catastrophize. And that's something that I learned in my own journey. And I learned over time through this training, like this practical optimism is something I've done on my patients, but I practice it every day. Like, I don't think, oh, okay, now just because I've written a book on it, yes, you can call me an expert, but I have to use it. And to me, that's very freeing.
Yeah, it is, because your book shares that it's not a mindset, it's a muscle.
Yes, yes, exactly. Optimism is a key feature of resilience. But I just looked at it as something you have or you don't. And I didn't realize 20 years ago that it's something that you can actually make an effort to change. And it is genetic, but guess what? Only 25% of it is.
Well, I was kind of laughing reading that part of your book because I had a therapist one time ask me, do you feel like the world has your back?
Interesting.
And she said, she shared that some people do and some people don't. And I very clearly thought about the people in my life. Like, my mom feels like the world has her back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think my dad does. And your dad was an optimist, right?
Yes. And he came from very humble beginnings. You know, he's born in the late 1930s in India. He grew up in Rajasthan, which is in the desert. At that time, there was no electricity. Most people didn't have it. But when you ask him about his childhood, all he remembers is, oh my God, we had camel rides and like hurricane lamps and ghost stories by the fireplace. I'm like, that's because you had no electricity. He's like, no, depends on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
You know, and sleepovers and slumber parties on the rooftop. I'm like, because it was too hot, because you didn't have fan, because you didn't have electricity. And he spins the stories in such ways and he makes himself laugh and just the eternal optimist. But also what I realize is that he's got a WhatsApp chat group with his friends from like the graduated med school in the 1950s in India. He travels all over the world to meet them. They have reunions. He drags me on trips. Like, he's constantly spearheading get-togethers, reunions. He's like 86.
Amazing. Why do you think having an optimistic mindset is important?
Optimism is a game changer in life. If you are like, I want to make more money, I want to be more fit, optimism is the way to go. Optimism is a wellspring for health, for wealth, for longevity, not just longevity, but exceptional longevity, which is living into your 80s with good health. Because a lot of times our lifespan is increasing in this country, but our health span, which is the number of years spent in good health, is not increasing to the same proportion. They did a 200,000 person study and they showed that optimism makes you 30% less likely to have a heart attack, 30% less likely to have strokes, 30% less likely to die from any reason prematurely.
Wow.
You are 40% more likely to get a raise as an optimist in the next year.
What?
Yep.
You're 40% more likely to get a raise.
Yes, in the next year.
Why do you think that is?
You know, the variety of things. Optimists are more likely to, A, not take things personally when things don't work out in their favor. So let's say that they were trying to get one. They will keep trying, right? And they're also really good with people. They have longer and stronger friendships, including in the workplace. They're easier to get along with. They're open-minded. They have secure attachments, or they're willing to at least work towards that, right? They have 5 times less burnout, 6 times more work engagement. So in every aspect of their life, like from in habits, from dental health to mental health, they take care of themselves. They go to annual visits. They wear their seatbelt. They're not smoking. They're exercising. So literally from head to toe, less anxiety, yeah, less depression.
So before writing Practical Optimism, you spent decades as a psychiatrist. What did you pick up from all of your patients that led you to writing this book about optimism?
What I realized is that only a small fraction of people are ever going to come and get help, right? We know that mental illness or mental health disorders are so common. 1 in 5 people have it. And anxiety is so common. But most people, 40 or 50%, will never seek treatment for a variety of reasons. Cost, stigma, they don't know they have it. They just think it's part of their personality. And I was thinking, how great would it be if the tools that I'm giving my patients who come in to make it accessible to everybody so that you don't have to wait for the other shoe to drop? Because that's what happened to me, right? And I think that we don't focus enough on prevention. And when I was working at the 9/11 program, I learned that, yes, resilience, this concept of bouncing back from adversity is great. But I realized that me personally, I was more interested in thriving in the face of it.
Well, I want to touch on your personal experience, but you mentioned the 9/11 program. Can you share what you were doing?
Sure, yes. So after my psychiatry residency training, I was recruited for this role. So it was my first job. And I became the medical director of the 9/11 mental health program at NYU. So we saw people from all walks of life, all backgrounds. You could have been the wealthy Wall Street, you know, billionaire, or you could have been involved with rescue, recovery, cleanup, first responders, people from different parts of the world. And everybody was the same because so many people were affected. They saw and witnessed people jumping out of the towers. They got injured. They had asthma, medical problems, PTSD, anxiety, depression, lost loved ones, lost coworkers, lost homes, spaces. So I really saw like the depths of depravity in terms of terrorism and what it tries to do, chip away your morale. But I saw also the heights of humanity, of how much love that New Yorkers had for one another, that the whole country really came together on this of how do we help one another. So to me, that was the most beautiful takeaway is the resilience of the human spirit and the capacity to really take care of our fellow citizens. And that was so beautiful. And so I hung on to that because I'm like, you can dwell in the negativity or you can dwell in possibility. Which one is it going to be?
I love that you say possibility because there's a hope there, which indicates a look toward the future. And to me, that's a part of optimism. Now, I can imagine people at the other end of this conversation thinking, you know, it's really hard to be optimistic when the world feels really heavy or challenging or sad. But the thing about your work is that you spent your career working with trauma survivors. Their lives are heavy and challenging and sometimes sad. But you say that you learned something firsthand from them. What is that through line?
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like a lot of times when we are sad and feeling depressed, our tendency is to ruminate and to kind of become very self-absorbed. And I feel like if you were to ask me why, as a society, we're so unhappy, I would say because we are extremely self-absorbed. And
really?
Yes. And everything about our culture is making us that way. And like the pressure to succeed, the pressure to look good, like God forbid you age. But whatever it is, it just pulls you back inward and makes you alienated and disconnected from the people around you. And yeah, what I learned, this patient that I worked with, she was in her 60s and she saw all of the horrific tragedies of that day. She was physically injured herself. She helped a few people get up and kind of save their life, if you will. She lost coworkers. And yet here she would always come to our program year after year as part of a screening. And we would screen her for depression, anxiety, but she never met criteria enough to come into our mental health program. But I'd see her in the hallways. And one day I had to ask her, I'm like, what brings you here? What are you doing? Like, you're not here for any like mental health issues. She's like, no, I'm accompanying XYZ patients. I'm here to give them support because of they have panic disorder. They can't ride the subways. And I was like, what keeps you so happy? How do you get out of bed every morning seeing what you saw? Mm-hmm. And she said to me, her name was Teresa. And she told me in Spanish, she's like, mi propósito, my purpose. Mm. And I was like, wow, like that was so profound to me.
Dr. Varma, we need to go to a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to dive into your book's 8 pillars, one of which you just mentioned, purpose. Simone, I hear you have a new hosting gig coming up.
You mean besides this podcast?
Yes, this podcast. But also, you're going to be hosting your house on Airbnb?
It's true. I'm going to be traveling a bit coming up, and it felt like the perfect opportunity to earn a little extra cash, baby.
I love your house.
I love my house, too. And it's great for families because it's already set up for traveling with kids. We have bunk beds. We have an extra stroller. We have toys galore. Traveling with kids can be a real challenge, so I'm always looking for ways to make that process easier. When I've stayed at friends' homes or hotels, they don't always have what I need for my family.
That's so true, and you've got it all at your place.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a win-win. I'm not worried about my house sitting empty, and I love that I get to show someone around my neighborhood without having to physically show them around my neighborhood, you know?
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes. That it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. I'm here with Dr. Sue Varma, and we're talking about purpose. Dr. Varma, that word is so weighted in our culture. Everybody's talking about, how do I find my purpose? What is my purpose? Talk to me about the link between optimism and purpose.
Yes. I'm playing with the words. A quote that I heard was that your purpose is your soul's way of engaging in the world.
Oh, I love that.
And then what I added to that is, in a way that is aligned with your own interests, hobbies, values, and talents. And so the key is that the purpose is not something out there to be found, right? It's something that exists within you. Mm-hmm. And if you can't find it, you have to create it. It's your job to create it. That is why you're here, right?
Yeah.
To find meaning and purpose. But the best way to find meaning and purpose is in some form of service for other people.
Yeah.
And that is the antidote to all of the unhappiness that is existing. I mean, I can tell you this from 20 years of clinical experience, that in the depths of depression, the last thing a person has the energy for or bandwidth for, they think at least, is to help another person. And the help can be so small. It could be like just checking in on a friend. And if you're like, but I'm depressed and I'm lonely and no one's checking in on me, by flipping the script, when you provide service to someone in some way, in some form, all of a sudden it gives you a sense of agency. I'm good at something, mattering,
mm-hmm.
somebody needs me, belonging, right? And that is what is lost when we're feeling sad and down and depressed.
You're hitting on something that I'm almost embarrassed to admit. I was reading your book. You talk about service so much, and you say that you're not always supposed to find purpose within your job. Sometimes it's outside of that.
Yes, yes.
And I'm like, I work so many hours a week. How am I supposed to even find an hour to go and dedicate my time? Like, I need to sleep.
Yes.
But you're right. It fills you up. So, like, the burnout actually comes from that lack of joy, that lack of purpose.
Yes. But, you know, Danielle, you can find purpose. And I talk about that, like, with, they call it job crafting or role remake, or just in general, finding the joy and the purpose and the help that you're providing in the work that you're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to go, I don't know, to a soup kitchen or a shelter to make a difference, right? Like, you're making impact right here, like, by providing information, your own expertise, your wit, your humor. It's like sometimes finding purpose in the work that you're already doing. So, like, if you're working a corporate job, what can you do? A lot of times people will call me and they'll be like, I'm not in HR, I'm not in wellness, I'm in finance. But as a volunteer role, I've taken on like the corporation's wellness week talk and I'm putting together, or the happy hour or the company parties or whatever, bringing people together.
Yeah.
So there's simple ways that within the job that you're already doing.
I really like that. Do you find that in your work?
Yeah. I mean, I feel so grateful. You know, I feel like called. I feel like it's a mission. Like it's something outside of myself, I have to say. Like it's almost like, you know, not to get like so woo-woo here, but I feel like...
We're a woo-woo podcast.
I feel like I was born to do this, you know, like I just... And it was maybe easier because I grew up in a family that was very mission-oriented. You know, what was hard for me, Danielle, it's so interesting, the flip side of purpose and having so much of it that you're dripping in it, is that then you don't always prioritize yourself, right? And that is something I had to learn the hard way.
When you say the hard way, what do you mean?
Are you ready to hear my story?
Please.
So here I was in the midst of my residency. And, you know, I remember when I interviewed for this program, they were like, you will be in the trenches, right? So you're going to be working with the wealthiest of the wealthiest and the poorest of the poor and everyone in between. And I was like, sign me up, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't know what I was getting myself into. We were working 100 hours a week. And then in the midst of all of that, I get a call that my mom was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. Now, for the most part, it is treatable, right? Except for the fact that she had an underlying heart condition and she couldn't get chemotherapy. Now, no one wanted to treat her. So now, in addition to running around between 5 hospitals of where I'm working, I'm now running around to hospitals with her to see who would treat her. And I started having these medical symptoms, right? And where my legs were shaking and weak, and I like didn't know what was going on, and I was putting it off. And then finally, when I sought treatment, the neurologist was like, after all these tests, you're totally fine. And I was like, but I'm not. I'm experiencing symptoms.
Physical symptoms.
Physical symptoms, right. And to the point where like it was hard to stand, to walk. And what I realized then and now is that the body expresses what the mind cannot. And so my body was manifesting all this stress of what's going to happen to my mom. Is she going to be okay? Again, that catastrophizing, right? And the mind going to the worst place scenario and feeling weak. And I realized that my home culture was all about, we take care of other people. We are strong. We don't seek help, right? So what I realized after going to therapy is that I'm not saying, it was so hard for me to say me first or wanting to take up space. It's not saying me first, it's saying me too. Like that I deserve to have a seat at the table to prioritize my own wellness, which is not something I did. Coming from a South Asian background, you know, the daughter that handled everything, also being a physician, like I became her physician in some way, like general practitioner. So I learned a lot. And I talk about this in the pillar of pride, which is really about self-compassion and how like we focus so much on self-esteem.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that self-esteem is only as good as long as you're performing and you're achieving and you're doing well. And when things are not going right in your life, self-esteem tanks.
This was the most surprising part of your book for me.
Really?
Yeah. I've been obsessed with confidence for a long time because I felt like a confident kid, and I saw the difference between my friends who felt confident and those who didn't. And I felt really grateful for my parents for instilling that in me. So I was like shocked, like, why doesn't she like self-esteem? What is better than self-esteem?
Self-worth.
And self-compassion, right? Mm-hmm.
The self-compassion does a few things. It normalizes what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Right? And so you don't go down the trap of shame and blame, right? And shame is a precursor to depression.
Yeah.
And it is a slippery slope that turns you inwards and says, not just I did a bad thing, it says I'm a bad person. There's a character assassination involved when there's shame. Guilt, on the other hand, isn't as bad because it focuses towards reparation. Okay, I did something bad. What can I do to fix it, right?
Yeah.
So guilt is better than shame, right? But in extreme amounts, even guilt isn't great. But what self-compassion says is, first thing is observe. Be mindful of the negative emotions or thoughts that you're having. And then there's an acceptance part, right? And then I added the part where you then move forward and you make a plan. And they've done so many studies on self-compassion that shows over and over again that if you do this like 3-step, 5-minute exercise, okay, observe, mindful observation of the negative thoughts, accept. And then what I love is this idea of common humanity, is that I'm not the only one who's been through this, right?
Yeah.
And they showed that with parents who are just experiencing stress by doing this exercise, their anxiety calms down. And also students, if they're failing an exam, they do this 10-minute compassion exercise.
Right.
Like nothing else. They didn't study anymore. They take the test again. They do better.
Yeah. You changed my mind. I was really grateful for that mention because I think the self-esteem part is sort of the armor that mm-hmm. I had around me. Mm-hmm. And through therapy, I've learned way more self-compassion. And the thing that has, I think, changed my life the most is that when you give yourself more compassion or you judge yourself less, mm-hmm. you're actually able to give more compassion to others, mm-hmm. judge others less.
Yes.
And it all starts inward. And yes. you're giving other people a gift.
Yes.
You have been an expert on so many talk shows. What's a part of your book that people haven't touched on that you think is really important?
You know, one thing that I'm really passionate about is just the idea of where we're going as a society. And I'm really concerned about it. There's something called the shallowing hypothesis, mm-hmm. which is that our relationships are not going as deep as they used to.
I have a whole thing on this.
Oh, tell me.
Because I'm obsessed with questions. I think questions are a love language, mm-hmm. and it's really about presence. To me, a question is saying, I'd rather be here with you than anybody else.
Yes.
And I think what you're hitting on is this high communication, low connection world.
Yes, yes.
That, and what did you call it? The shallowing?
Yeah, shallowing hypothesis.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of research behind it, but they're showing that, like, everything is getting dumbed down. And actually, there was an interesting article that was like, even our lyrics in songs, the words have become simpler. And not only are the words simpler, they're fewer. It's the same repetitive stuff. And this is not even AI. This is just songwriting. And also, the lyrics are more angry. I thought this was interesting. And more self-obsessed. These were the three takeaways. And I was like, and they're like, this is a reflection of who we are.
More angry, mm-hmm. more self-obsessed, mm-hmm. and simpler.
And simpler. And like just this idea of the mere presence of a phone on a dinner table already signals that the conversation isn't going to go deep. It's a predictor because you're already anticipating some sort of interruption. And there's a lot of anxiety of like, oh my God, this person has to leave or something's going to happen.
Yes. You feel like they're busy. Maybe I shouldn't be yes. here. Is this too much for them?
Yes. And so That's I talk about point. Like how to, this idea of emotional attunement, which is like being in tune with the person's emotions. So like, I love that you ask the questions.
And you kind of, I think sometimes we forget to ask big questions to people closest to us because
yes.
we ask, how's your day? We're in the minutiae of
yes.
it.
I think that the shallowing hypothesis, what's happening to our society and the fact that everything is like contactless, like yes, we have more convenience, like the Amazon, Instacart, all that stuff, Zoom, but we're missing so many of those built-in interactions, like just signing a credit card slip back in the day. So that's why I love when I see things coming out of Europe where they're having walking clubs where people, you know,
yeah.
where the point is the talking, the point is the social interaction. Here, I feel like you have to dupe people into. They're like, no, thank you. I don't need social interaction. Yes, but I'll come for the biking. But don't make me talk or interact, you know?
Yeah.
So I think
they're missing it.
Yeah, they're missing like the point.
For everybody listening, including myself, what are four things that practical optimists do?
So there are four things that practical optimists do every day, which is make time for the four M's. So those are mastery. And the key here is that you don't have to be a master to experience mastery. It could be a sport. It could be a hobby. But the idea that you're getting better at something.
Progress.
Yes. And that it's creating a flow state in your brain where you're totally immersed in something. So take on something that's just for you, doesn't have to be for anyone else. Mindfulness. And this doesn't have to be a 60-minute meditation. It could literally be 1 minute, listen to an app, Calm app, or whatever it is on YouTube. But the key here is to do something single-mindedly. Even if you're washing dishes, just focus just on that. You can listen to this podcast while you're doing the dishes, but otherwise just be focused. The other one is meaningful engagement. And in whatever way that you want to go deeper, do you want to do the 52 questions? If there was a podcast that you listened to share it with people, mm-hmm. something, this made me think of you. You know, I think that's really key every day. And to do like once a week, face-to-face, to meet someone in person, I think that's really key. And then movement. We don't realize that the benefit of movement in every aspect of our life, not only cognitive health, bone health, muscle health, all of that, right? If you feel like, I don't know what my purpose is, do one workout session. That one workout session is enough to, on some level, decrease anxiety and depression, but also boost your sense of purpose in life. I mean, how awesome is that?
Every time I've been really sad, mm-hmm. all I know is to turn to go work out. And I have my mom to thank for that.
That's amazing.
But I don't quite understand that link.
Yes.
Why does it
yes.
give us, it makes me feel purposeful.
Yes, totally. So on one level, okay, so it's boosting the endorphins. It's boosting dopamine. Even your body image changes just from one workout. You're the same person from 45 minutes ago, more or less.
Yeah.
Plus one workout, right? So you're like, I didn't like suddenly grow a six pack or what, you know, in yes. this one 45-minute workout. but you feel so productive. You're like, I did something really hard today. And it's that sense of agency, like, I can, I am capable. So I feel like the takeaway, so these four habits, they are really like habits unto themselves, but you don't realize they're also habits that beget other habits. Because once you do them every single day, you connected with a friend, right? You did the workout, you did some form of meditation or whatever it is, you got better at a skill or a hobby. And hey, you can combine all four of them by pick one class, go with a friend. You've hit off, checked off meaningful engagement, you've done the movement, you could do some mindfulness if it's yoga, mastery, you're getting better at it. But then you come back, in 1 hour, you could hit all four, and then the rest of your day, you're like, I'm an awesome person, bring it on. So you're gonna start opening bills that you've been putting aside, you're gonna open mails, you're gonna start applying for a new job, you might take on a new venture, you might plan a trip, you might ask for the promotion, you might ask somebody out on a date. Like, it's gonna refuel you.
It's the objects in motion stay in motion.
Absolutely. I love that you said that.
Okay, what is one thing we can all do today to increase our optimism?
Learn to reframe any negative situation. So bringing it back to me talking about my dad, like, yes, you can feel sorry for yourself. The world sometimes feels like it's on fire because it kind of is, right?
Yeah.
Like with all that's happening in the world, it's so easy to get pulled down and dragged down in the negativity. And you can just ask yourself, how can I be a more compassionate version of myself? How can I give myself grace? How can I give other people grace?
Dr. Varma, I knew that this conversation was going to be wonderful, but I didn't know just how wonderful. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm such a pleasure to meet you in person.
Dr. Sue Varma is a psychiatrist and cognitive behavioral therapist and the author of the book, Practical Optimism. It's hard to pick just one takeaway from this conversation because I think Dr. Varma actually illuminated a lot. But one of the lessons that stuck with me was not so much about her work or her research or her study, which was all fascinating. It was how she chose to live her life. And it's that optimism is a muscle, not a mindset. I think that it's something we take for granted. We think we should just be optimistic. But there's all these practices and habits we can put in place to have more agency over it.
I'm embarrassed to admit how old I was when I actually learned this and put it into practice. I don't think it's something that most people grow up learning or being taught.
We don't think about it. We just take it for granted, I think.
Yeah.
What do you do to be more optimistic?
I think it's about gratitude. It's about perspective. I think my family really helps me with that. And this idea of remembering when you wanted what you have now. Finding small ways to remind yourself of that every day.
That sounds like gratitude's big for you.
Yeah, I think that makes me more optimistic.
I love that you mentioned family. Mm-hmm. I think family makes me more optimistic too. And seeing older relatives and they've gone through hard things and they make it through, that makes me more optimistic. Like having that totem pole almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and friends too. Friends that make you laugh.
Yeah, she mentions connection a lot, which is important. Those girlfriends and those dinner table conversations that just make everything hard feel like it's going to be okay. Okay, tomorrow we're doing something a little different. We're putting on a memorial for the girl boss. Culture critic Lee Stein helps us lay her to rest.
Oof, I got a lot to say about her. Not Lee Stein, but the girl boss. Listen and follow The Bright Side on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find me, your girl, Simone Boyce, on Instagram and TikTok.
I'm Danielle Robay, at Danielle Robay on Instagram and TikTok. That's R-O-B-A-Y.
See you tomorrow, folks. Keep looking on the bright side.
Bye, besties. Simone, you may not know this, but I have been bitten by the travel bug. This time of year, I crave the outdoors and the mountains and adventure. They're calling to me.
I mean, we were both in Austin recently for work and also having a time. And as soon as I got home, I was already on Airbnb planning my next trip, possibly this summer. And while I'm away, I'll be hosting my home on Airbnb.
While you're out of town for your next adventure, your home could be an Airbnb too. And hey, it might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.